Zechariah chapter 13. Why would we open to Zechariah when we're doing a study of John? Well, because we've come to that place where Jesus himself calls himself the Good Shepherd. That suggests a contrast to other shepherds, does it not? Zechariah chapter 13, beginning in verse number 1. In that day, again the term that day is significant, there shall be a fountain open to the house of David and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem for sin and for uncleanness. And it shall come to pass in that day, saith the Lord of hosts, that I will cut off the names of the idols from out of the land, and they shall no more be remembered. And also I will cause the prophets and the unclean spirit to pass out of the land. And it shall come to pass that when any shall yet prophesy, then his father and his mother that begat him shall say unto him, Thou shalt not live, for thou speakest lies in the name of the Lord. And his father and his mother that begat him shall thrust him through when he prophesieth. Does that sound serious? And it shall come to pass in that day that the prophet shall be ashamed, every one of his vision when he hath prophesied, neither shall they wear a rough garment to deceive. But he shall say, I am no prophet, but an husbandman, for man hath taught me to keep cattle from my youth. And one shall say unto him, What are these wounds in thine hands? And he shall answer, Those with which I was wounded in the house of my friends. Awake, O sword, against my shepherd, and against the man that is my fellow, saith the Lord of hosts. Smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered, and I will turn mine hand upon the little ones. And it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith the Lord, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein. And I will bring the third part through the fire, and I will refine them as silver is refined, and will try them as gold is tried. They shall call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, It is my people. And they shall say, The Lord is my God. And so this is speaking of what's going on today. Not hardly. Israel is gathered back in the land, as the scriptures prophesied, but they're gathered together in unbelief. And who do you suppose is being spoken of up until verse number 6? Well, yes, in verse number 1. Yes, but I said up until verse number 6.
They were talking about ones that are prophesying, yet mom and dad killed them in the name of the Lord for blasphemy.
Yes.
So
that's pretty serious, isn't it?
They were antichrist, whatever they were.
So you don't suppose, then, that it's speaking of sometime present. What period of time do you think is being spoken of here then?
Tribulation period.
Okay, it does speak of the tribulation period. But when will the name of the idols be cut off out of the land and no more remembered? Sure, during the millennial kingdom. Absolutely. What do you suppose the term that day refers to? That term is used quite often.
Isn't it the physical advent of Christ, which is the ground?
Well, it speaks of the day of the Lord. Yes, yeah, so of course that would be included. So, where do you suppose we find a correlation with what we're studying in John chapter 10. It's especially in verse number 4. Okay. That's a margin note.
Yeah.
Jesus said it himself. The scribes and Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Was Moses a prophet?
Mm-hmm.
Most certainly he was. Absolutely. Now let's compare verse number 1. And let's read it again. In that day, there's the term, there shall be a fountain opened to the house of David and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem for sin and for uncleanness. We sing a hymn of a fountain. What would that be? Yes. And where's it drawn from? Yes. Verse number 6 then. And one shall say unto him, what are these wounds in thy hands? Then he shall answer, those which I was wounded in the house of my friends. What do you suppose came from the wounds in his hands?
Blood.
Yes, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. And then verse number 7, awake, O sword, against my shepherd. There it is. And against the man that is my fellow, saith the Lord of hosts, smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered. We're going to find that Jesus actually makes a quotation from here in his earthly ministry. And then, of course, he speaks of this refining fire in verse number 8 and following. And what period of time do you suppose that speaks of? The tribulation, of course. So it's pretty much all here. But the point that we wanted to see is that Jesus is a shepherd. Who do you suppose my shepherd is? In that day. Well, we're seeing him in John chapter 10, are we not? Okay. Now, as I said last time we got together, we were going to take a look at a series of 7 shepherds. And so let's undertake that journey this morning, and we'll start in Genesis chapter 4. Genesis chapter 4. Wow, it starts pretty early, doesn't it? What's the book of Genesis sometimes called? It's the book of beginnings, that's what the word means. But it's also called the seed plot of the Bible.
The what?
The seed plot of the Bible. Okay, Genesis chapter 4 then. And let's just start reading in verse number 1. And Adam knew Eve his wife, and she conceived, and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. And she again bare his brother Abel. And Abel was a keeper of, what?
Sheep.
But Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and his offering, but unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect, and Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, why art thou wroth? And why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door, and unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. And Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass that when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him. So we find the very first shepherd mentioned in the Bible slain by Cain. And it's interesting, that name Cain means what? It's right there in verse number 1. Eve believed that she had received Cain from the Lord, but what did his subsequent actions prove? See what the fall did to the intellect and judgment of mankind. And then she bears Abel, and what does his name mean? Emptiness or vanity. In other words, he has no purpose. I've already gotten the promised man from the Lord, and so this one has no real purpose. That was Eve's surmising. And now, what was it, Abel's occupation once again? He is a shepherd. And Cain's occupation? A tiller of the ground. Now the time comes to make an offering to the Lord. The Lord always puts the test out, doesn't he? And here it comes. Verse number 3, and in the process of time, it came to pass. Did this happen immediately? No. The scripture says in the process of time, we're not told how much time. But what do you suppose has happened in this process of time?
Have they been making sacrifices? Obviously, they must have.
Of course.
They knew the right way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Of course they did. So what do you suppose happened over the process of time? Cain started thinking that his way was as good as God's way. Pretty much. The line of Cain is spoken of a number of times in the scriptures, isn't it? It sure is. Well, what do we find here then? Yes. But it happens over the process of time. It doesn't happen immediately. Do you suppose Cain made the right sorts of sacrifices in the beginning? Of course he did. But now the test comes in, because he begins to turn away. And so God puts forth a test. And here it is. Verse number 4. Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and unto his offering. So the question right away is, why? Mm-hmm. And what did the Lord require? What did they learn in the Garden of Eden? Yes. That's right. And the Lord said unto Cain, verse number 6, why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? What does this tell us? Yes, he was upset, and his countenance fell, but why was he upset?
Because the Lord respected Abel's sacrifice and not his. He didn't like what Cain.
That's the gist of it right there. God refused to accept his sacrifice And so rather than Cain saying, God is right here, and I've been wrong, now I'm going to turn around and do the right thing, he becomes angry. Have you ever seen anything like that in today's society? Well, yes. Yes. Not very much has changed in 6,000 years, has it? Why hasn't it changed?
We haven't changed.
Because mankind hasn't changed. Since the fall in the Garden of Eden, man has ever been the same. We find here that discernment is clouded in the case of Eve here. She makes a crucial mistake. What do you suppose Eve thought after Cain had slain Abel? It was the first time. It had never happened before, so far as we know.
No, I mean going against God to the extent that it was a terrible, terrible reaction.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's true. Now, is there a difference between what Cain does here and what Adam does in the Garden of Eden? Because this is going to be drawn out later in the scriptures. So I thought I'd just bring it up now. It's something that we find in the book of Romans, let's say chapter 5. And if you just threw a dart, it'd probably end up at verse 12. I mean, it's just happenstance that I guessed that. And death by sin. Keep going, you're not there yet. Maybe somebody should look it up. When I said keep going, that was the hint.
5:12. Wherefore, as by one sin man sin entered into the world, with death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. For unto the law sin was in the world, but sin was not imputed when there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over them that had not sinned, after the similitude of Adam's transgression.
That's where we were going. That's why I suggested you keep going. So, what's this business about the similitude of Adam's sin?
He did it with a high hand.
Who did?
Adam.
Yes. So, how did Cain and Abel hear about the necessity of a blood sacrifice?
Mom and dad.
Okay. All right.
So that's my hand as well.
Do you see what the difference is? And I bring this out, too, when we come to Mount Sinai. What makes the Jew a transgressor in addition to being a sinner?
They
got it first person directly from God. So they're not just sinners, but now they're also transgressors of the direct commandment of God.
But in this case, Adam was the only one that was a transgressor. I mean, even Cain, because that came from his father, that didn't come from God.
That's the point we're trying to make, exactly. Okay, so we find here that Cain slays his brother, who just happens to be a shepherd. And now let's go to the book of Ruth in chapter 4.
We were talking about types of Christ, right?
Oh, yes.
Isn't it interesting that the shepherd was slain?
We'll get there all in due time.
Well, but we have Joseph down as the one.
What's that?
Oh, so Abel is number one.
Abel is number one.
Chronologically.
Okay. All right.
Well, and we're taking it chronologically so that it makes sense. We're doing it just the way a Berean would do. When you start searching for truth concerning some subject in the Scripture, what's your first rule? It's the rule of first mention. Find the place where it's first mentioned in the Scriptures. That's why we went to the book of Genesis and looked at Abel, because this is the first time that the idea of a shepherd is mentioned in the Scriptures. Does that make sense? That's
I got confused when we talked about Abel or Joseph last week.
Oh.
I had already put down Joseph.
I hate to be the author of confusion.
You're not. Okay. I do that just mine on my own.
Let's go to the book of Ruth then, carrying this idea forward. Ruth chapter 4 and verse number 14. And the women said unto Naomi, Blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life, and a nourisher of thine own age, for thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. And Naomi took the child, and laid it in her bosom, and became nurse unto it. And the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, There is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, and he is the father of David. Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez begat Hezron, and Hezron begat Ram, and Ram begat Amminadab, and Amminadab begat Nashon, and Nashon begat Salmon, and Salmon begat Boaz, and Boaz begat Obed, and Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David. Okay, that's going to bring us to the fifth in line. We're not going to go there just yet, but you want to tuck that away and go to Matthew chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22 and verse number 42. Let's do verse 41 first. Help us get the context. Well, the Pharisees were gathered together. Jesus asked them, saying, What think ye of Christ? Whose son is he? They say unto him, The son of David. He saith unto them, How then doth David in spirit call him Lord, saying, The Lord said unto my Lord, Sit thou on my right hand till I make thine enemies thy footstool. If David then call him Lord, how is he his son? And no man was able to answer him a word, neither durst any man from that day forth ask him any more questions. Did you think God doesn't have a sense of humor? Okay, what have we established here? David was the one that was promised in the book of Ruth? Okay. Now we've got David to Christ, have we not? Now let's go to Revelation 22, shall we? Just to complete this little train of thought that we started. Revelation chapter 22 and verse number 16. Here we find the answer. I, Jesus, have sent mine angel to testify unto you these things in the churches. I am the root and offspring of David, and the bright and morning star. So what has the Lord said here? He's both the root and offspring of David. Well, now, that's interesting. But going back to Cain and Abel just for a moment, what do we see as a similarity between Christ and Abel? Since we've established now from Zechariah that they're both shepherds, and Jesus now says he's the good shepherd, which brings us to this study that we're making. Well, is there a similarity here? Smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered. Could you say that the similarity is both Abel and the Lord were slain by wicked hands? By their own brethren according to the flesh? Pardon? Yes. That's why we read that passage. So, do you think Abel is a type of Christ? Of course he is. Okay, that's the first in the series. We've done the law of first mention and gone back in the scriptures to the first place where a shepherd is mentioned. And, of course, this will whet our appetite to find out, well, where do we go from here? Are there other shepherds mentioned in the scriptures that are also types of Christ? Well, let's go to Genesis chapter 30 and see if we can find out. Genesis chapter 30. And we'll start reading in verse number 30. Genesis chapter 30. Verse number 30. For it was little which thou hadst before I came, and it is now increased unto a multitude. And the Lord hath blessed thee since my coming, and now when shall I provide for mine own house also? Now, of course, this is Jacob here in conversation with Laban, his uncle. And since we already know this story, let's see what we can make of it. Verse 31. And he said, what shall I give thee? And Jacob said, thou shalt not give me anything. If thou wilt do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep thy what? Flock. Okay, so what is Jacob now doing for Laban? He's a shepherd, and he's keeping his flock. And what has the Lord done under the hand of Jacob?
Blessed.
He's blessed him, and these flocks have increased. That's what he's saying in verse number 30. He's making this argument with Laban. You know, it was little which thou hadst before I came, and now it's increased unto a multitude, and the Lord has blessed thee since my coming, and now when shall I provide for mine own house also? Well, let's stop and think about this for a moment. And while you're thinking about it, turn to Genesis 33. What does Jacob want to do? He wants to provide for his own house. Okay. Let's go to Genesis 33 then, with that thought in mind. Genesis 33, verse number 13. And he said unto him, my Lord knoweth that the children are tender, and the flocks and herds with the young are with me, and if men should overdrive them one day, all the flock will die. Let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before thy servant, and I will lead on softly according as the cattle that goeth before me, and the children be able to endure until I come unto my Lord, unto Seir. Now, of course, this is when Jacob meets his brother Esau once again, many, many years after the heel-grabbing incident. And what is Jacob still doing? He's negotiating, but what is Jacob engaged still in the business of? Yes, he's still a shepherd. Yes, he's negotiating. But what does he say here? The children are tender and the flocks and herds are young with me. And if men should overdrive them one day, all the flock will die. Does it sound like he is protective? Okay. How is Jacob then here a type of Christ? Mm-hmm. That's true. What does he do in Genesis 49? Since we've been there so many times, I scarce think we need to go back and read it once again. Yes, it is. And not just to Joseph. The patriarchal blessing and prophecies concerning all of the 12 tribes. Yes. So, how is Jacob a type of Christ here? He's also a type of man, too, isn't he? A type of the believer. But here, we see that he's a type of Christ, and interesting, it's in connection with being a shepherd. He wants to nurture the flock. He has tender care of the flock. He doesn't want Esau, who is a type of what here? Type of the world? A worldling? He wants to protect the flock from being overdriven by the worldlings? He's protective of the flock, in other words? What about Christ? Do you think he's protective of his flock? Let's go on to the third one then, shall we? Genesis 37. My, we just keep looking in the book of Genesis, don't we? How about that? Genesis 37. Genesis 37. Let's just start in verse number 1, shall we? And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the what? Flock with his brethren. Interesting. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. So what's Joseph engaged in doing? He's a shepherd. That's interesting. Let's see what comes of that by going to Genesis chapter 47. Can you see why you need to be very familiar with the book of Genesis? Genesis chapter 47 and verse number 12. Now, this is after they discover who Joseph is. In what land? Yes. So, 47 and verse number 11. And Joseph placed his father and his brethren and gave them a position in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph nourished his father and his brethren and all his father's household with bread according to their families. What does it sound like Joseph is still in the business of doing? Yes, but this time, yes, of course. Look at verse number 25. What do his brethren have to say? And they said, "Thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants." What's he saying here? This is kind of strange, because we usually think of Egypt as being a type of the world. But God has his own ways of dealing with things, doesn't he? Maybe we should back up and read some more of this.
What verse are you
in? I was in verse number 25. Genesis 47. I should have read the context, I guess. And so let's go back and do that. Now, what's happened here is the 7 fat years that Joseph prophesied have come to an end, and now the 7 lean years have begun. And so now the people come and petition Joseph because he took a portion of all the produce of Israel and laid it up in granaries under the hand of Pharaoh. And so now the people have nothing to eat, and they come to Joseph and say, "Well, why don't you give us some of the corn that's in these granaries of Pharaoh?" And that's when Joseph says, well, let's read it again. And they said, verse 25, "Thou hast saved our lives." These are the people of Egypt. "You've saved our lives." This is what they're saying to Joseph. "Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants."
So
that's interesting. Yes, no, not his family. These are the people of Egypt. Verse 26, "And Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt unto this day, that Pharaoh should have the 5th part, except the land of the priests only, which became not Pharaoh's." So what is Joseph telling the people of Egypt that Pharaoh is? Is Joseph telling the people of Egypt that Pharaoh is a type of God here? Of course he is. Is he also telling the people that Pharaoh is a shepherd in his own way? That's interesting, because we usually think of Pharaoh as being the enemy, and certainly Pharaoh will become the enemy of Israel. But here where Joseph is involved, what do we see? And we must remember, this Pharaoh that knew Joseph did what for the Egyptians? Mm-hmm. Yes. Can you see the typology that's being set up here? Now, what does the scripture say that the Egyptians thought about shepherds? That's interesting, too. Every shepherd is an abomination unto the Egyptians, and yet this whole business is set aside And Pharaoh gives the land of Goshen to the Israelites. Now, what do we know about the land of Goshen? Where was it geographically? Yes, it's right down in the Nile Delta. It's the most fertile land in all of Egypt. And Pharaoh gives this to the Israelites to dwell there. Can you see that Pharaoh is a type of a shepherd here, and so is Joseph? And of all the characters in the Bible, Joseph is probably the clearest type of Christ that you can find.
He was very humble in what he was doing.
Absolutely. Pharaoh actually made Joseph the ruler over all of Israel. And Joseph made Pharaoh is a type of who to the Israelites and the Egyptians, a type of God. And exactly. And they said that in the verse that we read, in verse 25, "Thou hast saved our lives." Well, that's pretty amazing. Do you think that now Pharaoh is a type of a shepherd? Of course, and Joseph obviously is a shepherd in fact as well as in type.
Do you have those 3 and 4?
Excuse me?
Of the 7, is that 3 and 4?
No.
Just Joseph being 3?
Yes. We don't have time this morning now, for our time is gone, but number 4 will be Moses. And I think we all probably know where we would go with that. So we had Abel as the first, and these are all types of Christ. Jacob next, types of shepherds. Joseph next. And then next time we get together, we'll look at Moses. And so on until we get to the 7th, which you've probably already guessed is the good shepherd. But for now, let's pray.